everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. And
except for not always,
because next week Trevor's leaving us forever. No, he's not leaving us. He's just he's going on his honeymoon next week, and he will not be here. And also, it makes sense as to why he will not be Skyping in. So we will have a guest host next week. I'll let you wait until next week to figure out who that is. Also, we're in a new studio. You might not have seen our...
Moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah. You might not have seen the Foundation follow-up, which is our like live stream show. Audio, again, I think I said this literally the last time we're in the new studio. This shouldn't make that big of a difference for audio listeners, but if you're a YouTube person that you like watching, it's pretty sick. We will post a picture on Instagram so that... If you're listening on audio and you want to check out what our new studio looks like, head over there to our Instagram at Foundation Disc Golf, and you can check out the post and kind of see what you're see where we make what you're listening to.
Mm-hmm.
That one came out right.
Perfect.
Also, before we start, we're about to get into Jonesboro news and stuff like that. You might see this coffee in front of me. That is because I won the dark horse pick courtesy of Sam. I played with him at Clemson. I was very confident in him. And he did it for me. So this is a nice horchata courtesy of Trevor.
Once again, Connor got ahead in the game due to the ratings default. Which
that's how he won last week. This week it's how he came
which
in
is fair
place.
Game. Not a complaint. Fair game. You choose a lower rated player, you get that opportunity. But Connor and I, our players tied, but he had the lower rated player, so he came in second.
This is about the most expensive drink I could get without going over the limit.
What was the limit?
$5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was it at?
It was a little over $4.
Yeah, there we go.
And then I tipped a guy.
Connor just kind of disappeared, but he's back. Really confused me. Let's get into Jonesboro, though. Enough joking around. There was a lot of stuff that went down at Jonesboro. Super interesting tournament. Did not shake down really how we expected in a lot of ways, but the results, Ricky was able to take it down by 4 strokes over Calvin Heimberg.
I mean, did it not, though?
Eagle McMahon came in third. I was more thinking an FPO. And then I went to MPO.
Okay. But, okay, I was like, it was 2 out of 3. Right?
Ricky, though, is having himself a year right now.
Ricky might be impossible to beat.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's... I've seen this online, people have been talking about Ricky having himself a great season. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, is he really, though? He just has 3 wins. Well, one's a national tour, one's a pro tour, and one's a pro tour silver series, his 3 wins. And then I think he has like a 5th place and an 11th place outside of that. But the thing we have to remember is a dominant season nowadays looks so much different. Because the field is so much better.
Well, yeah, and how many has he won? Like 3 out of 4?
Like what? 3 out of 5, I'm pretty sure.
I'm saying on a current streak. Like
the current streak's 3 out of 4.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of like.
Is it first, fifth, or first, fifth, first?
I don't know, but the current event is that Ricky is unbeatable. Like, yeah, maybe a few events from now, he won't be on the hot streak he's on right now. But like as of now, Ricky is like on a streak where he looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's pretty hard to argue for someone else not being the number one player in the world right now.
I don't know
if
anybody can beat him right now.
I think the closest person to Ricky this year so far is Calvin Heimberg.
Calvin is literally captain second place, and like he's obviously capable of winning. I'm not saying that. I'm not like not like I've said about Eagle before. I'm like Eagle's so good, but he can't win. Calvin is a player who can win and can probably win a lot, but he just like is so good at coming in second place, it seems like, because he's like so consistent.
He's like the Katrina Allen of the MPO field.
Yeah, kind of. Like, he's just so consistent. He's always up like, there. Unless somebody has to go off to beat him each week, but then even like on the weeks where that does happen, he's just always there in second.
Yeah, he's still there.
Like, he is like the guy to beat every week, it almost seems like, just because you have to beat him to win. Because he's always in second.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the overall year and compare Calvin's overall year so far to Ricky's overall year, I mean, we're still pretty early in the year, but we're also, I mean, things are moving. Things are moving along.
Yeah.
Calvin's probably having himself an overall better year, average finish-wise. That might not even be true. It'd be pretty close. But I think Ricky's having a better year because he's able to have one Pro Tour win and one National Tour win.
Right. You got to factor
in. Which I think, with how much parity we're seeing, having like a multiple Pro Tour win season, even if it's 2 or 3, is like, it's almost gonna be unheard of. Like, that's gonna be very tough to do this year.
Yeah, I feel like the kind of the norm is gonna be like the best players in the world win like 2, maybe 3 Pro Tours, and if you win like 4 Pro Tours in a year, you just dominated. Like, you had
awesome
yourself season.
A serious year.
Because like that's what it's becoming. Although I will say, like, even saying that, like, I really think the way it's shaping out this year, like, now that we're kind of hitting our stride with the season, it does seem like it's going to be really hard for anybody to beat Calvin or Ricky. Like, I wonder what's going to happen. Like, if those guys are going to lose, like, ever this
year. I mean, it's definitely going to be hard, but you also every weekend have Paul in contention. This weekend, I think he came in fifth, but he was up there.
He was in contention, but he wasn't.
You will have Eagle coming in and out. You should have Chris Dickerson kind of coming in as the season goes on. He hasn't yet, but
James Conrad's honestly been there more than other people.
As I'm saying, there's still plenty of people who are capable of toppling them.
Right.
That it's not. I don't think we're going to see nearly as dominant of a year as we've seen in the year.
Well, my thing is, like, when you talk about, like, the Calvin and Ricky thing, it just seems to be like as they're getting warmed up this season. It's like the only way, my opinion. I mean, Paul, you can throw into this mix too. He just hasn't been as consistent as them. But in my opinion, if Calvin or Ricky is on, you're not beating either of them unless you're Paul. And so you got like a 50-50 shot. If one of the other is on, you're not going to beat them. And it seems like the percentage chance that neither one of them has a good weekend is getting like lower and lower as they get warmed up to where it's like you got to hope one of, like, both of them have a bad weekend, because if one of them has a good weekend, they win. Like, it's getting to that point, it seems like.
It is definitely it. I still think that,
because Calvin Heinberg's golf and Ricky's golf, their best golf, nobody other than Paul, maybe Eagle, can beat them right now, I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what we said at the beginning of the year, is those four guys. I think we might have thrown Kevin Jones in there.
I'm just saying it's
because that was a shock, but
at the beginning of the year, things I feel like were a little more shaken up, but as they've gotten into their stride, I think it's
those four players have always been the four players, is what I'm saying.
Well, we thought Dickerson was going to be in that mix too.
We thought, yeah.
He hasn't been.
It hasn't been, but those four are like the obvious four. Eagle, honestly, if you look at just this year, you can't really put Eagle in that mix.
No, he's not having a great year.
He hasn't really blamed it on his back much. He's posted it a few times, but he hasn't put it out there a lot, which I respect. You know, we talked about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's blaming every week he's going out. And he's immediately like, oh, well, my back, I'm injured.
Right.
You don't see him posting that a ton. But that we don't know how much that plays into
he's
it.
Having,
but
he's having an okay season.
Skill-wise, he's definitely up there. I agree with that. Right.
Yeah, he's having an okay season. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he has a win. Like, there's a lot of good players, really good players that don't have wins yet. So, like, he's having a fine season. It's just, like, Eagle McMahon, I still think, is, like, maybe the most talented, like, thrower of the Frisbee. When he's at his best, like, he seems, like, ridiculously good. So I'm just a little surprised how he's played this season. And I think it comes down to his mental game isn't quite there. I think Eagle McMahon, if he stays healthy, like, could get really dangerous as he gets into his upper 20s and gets, like, is in the game a bit more and his mental game gets stronger, he could get even more dangerous.
Yeah, I think if Eagle can develop, like, some touch, he has touch, but if he could develop, like, a really good, like, finesse type upshot game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he's like just as comfortable with finessey shots and like woodsy touch shots as he is with those power shots, then he's going to be a real, real force to be reckoned with. Because right now he's a force to be reckoned with without a super great woods touch game.
Admittedly, Eagle McMahon is at his best when he's throwing huge hyzers.
Yeah.
Like, he is, like, the best player in the world when it comes to just stretch back.
And that goes forehand and backhand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Both. If it's a wide open course.
That's why he won in Vegas.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to bet against him. That's also why he's up here at Jonesboro.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, like, you can make a few mistakes, and if you're crushing it out there, those mistakes won't hurt you that bad type thing. Mm-hmm. It's that type of course, and that's why he's obviously up in the mix here.
Yeah.
Another person that's having themselves one heck of a season, also on Discmania, is Casey White.
Yeah.
He put together another solid tournament. I feel like we've talked about him a few different times, and what's important about this tournament is he was able to qualify for the USDGC alongside Miles Seaborn, Ben Callaway, Colton Montgomery, and Aaron Gossage, is how I'm going to say his last name.
Those USDGC spots were really up for grabs. That was, like, interesting. I wonder, I don't know how many, I don't really know where you can keep track of how many spots are up for grabs at each event, but
that one was five, I believe.
Yeah, that one was five, but I don't know, like, for the future events before US, but that's, like, a really fun storyline. That's, like, if the tournament kind of gets out of reach, it's almost more fun to pay attention to, like, oh, who's going to get a USDGC
spot? Yeah, because going into the final days, we talked about anybody it during the follow-up. There was like 15 people that could have gotten in there.
Yeah.
And at one point during the final round, Brody Smith was in like the second USDGC spot when he was like 7 down through 11.
Yeah.
that was like exciting thing to watch. And then obviously his round kind of fell apart for the holes 12 through 12 through 18. Another player that was we were looking at, obviously part of Team Foundation, is Gannon Burr. He had snuck up in there. And again, I think that's a very fun storyline to watch. But congrats to Casey White on that. He was also able to sneak into the top 20 in Pro Tour standings right now.
Yeah, he's like kind of like almost a most improved player candidate right now. He's like having a better season than a lot of really good pros. Like, you don't usually think of Casey White as like the kind of player that he's been this season.
Yeah.
Like, he's really impressing me. I didn't think he was that good. And to be honest, like, he's proven me wrong this season. He's playing really well.
Yeah, it's been a very, very impressive season. I mean, I would have been in the same boat as you. I mean, neither of us picked him in our preseason top 20.
No, yeah.
But I think both of us would pick him in our midseason top 20.
Yeah, good for him.
So, I mean, yeah, definitely impressive stuff from him. As we move over to FPO, we had Katrina Allen winning this by 8 strokes. Paige Pierce coming in second. Sarah Hokum in third. Before this event, you were on the podcast said basically if Paige doesn't win this event, it could be the first signs that she's in trouble.
Yeah.
Which she made this Instagram post. It was a little weird. Basically saying the second place at Jonesboro stung. And it eventually, she talked about kind of what was going on with the event, and it eventually led to her saying that she's going to be taking some time off, heading to Hawaii for a reset and recharge, which this is going to make her miss 2 Silver Series events and a national tour event.
Yeah.
So I think even she's kind of on this, like, she might be in trouble.
Well, I think she's probably making a good decision. I think taking a little breather, she can afford to do it, obviously, is a good idea. I think she probably needs to, because the more, if she's going to play every weekend and is stressing out about how she needs to get back on track, like, she needs to like sit back and like think for a second, I think, and like kind of regain her like mojo. I think that's kind of what she alluded to in the post. Because, you know, I had mentioned the whole thing about Jonesboro kind of being like a big deciding tournament for her. She still made it really confusing for me because I thought she was either going to win or just like blow up again. And she did neither. She came in second. So it was very confusing for me to decide still.
But she was not, the only time she was really in it was after round one.
No, which, so that makes it even almost more confusing. It's like she didn't blow up, but she didn't play great and she came in second. So like I can't decide. I think she's just playing like, she's bad golf. I think like the whole like time, like skip a few events. She mentioned, I mean, I'll give her credit. Like she mentioned in the Instagram post, like it seemed like she was just not practicing as much. Like she's kind of mentioned like, I need to be making more putting reps and things like that. So yeah, I think it's probably for the best for her to just like get herself out of the storylines and FPO for a second, like recharge and then attack the next event. And then hopefully she'll be back to normal because like she mentioned in the post, she needed 1,008 golf to win. And like we know Paige Pierce is capable of that. She's just not playing well right now. And I think, I think she just lost a bit of confidence and she can gain it back like that. That's the game of golf. Like you can lose your mojo, you know, lose that swagger. And then all it takes is one good round and all of a sudden it's right back. And you're like, oh, yeah. And you kind of rediscover yourself. So I'm not like I'm not closing the book on Paige Pierce. Like I think she's probably gonna win another world title or two or three before it's all said and done.
No, yeah, absolutely.
So like, it's been a very like interesting thing to follow. But I think the bigger storyline out of this event was how well Katrina Allen played.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that Paige even is a storyline in these events is simply because she has built her whole brand in like her reputation on dominance
and never losing.
It's the same, it's a similar thing with Paul. Whereas as soon as either of them don't win an event or don't win a few events in a
it's
row,
a big deal.
It's a storyline.
Yeah,
and you see Facebook posts. Now one thing you could talk about is that potentially bad for them? Because like, let's just say that as these players keep getting better and better and they aren't dominant, let's just say that this is a trend that continues for the rest of the year, how relevant is Paige now? Right now, she's obviously very relevant, but let's say this was the rest of the year. Let's say somehow she went the rest of the year without a win.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy scenario that I don't think will happen, but let's say it did. Is Paige Pierce still relevant in that scenario simply because the storyline right now is what's going on with Paige because she's not winning?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we always expect her to win, so her coming in third or fourth is like shocking.
Yeah.
Because you almost in your head are like, wow, she's playing really bad. So if she continuously did that, Is that going to end up hurting her, you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, relevance within disc golf is pretty correlated directly to just how many fans you have. Yeah. And the thing you got to remember about sports is there's not really a huge correlation between – there's a big correlation between success and gaining fans. There's not a very big correlation between success and losing fans. Like, the Cleveland Browns football team still has fans, and they were awful for so long. Tiger Woods, when he stunk for a few years – did not really lose any fans. He might not have been gaining any new ones.
People were just excited to still see him.
Right. So, like, even though Paige Pierce may not gain a ton of fans during a bad stretch in her season, I don't think, like, everybody who's a Paige fan, like, is not really going to, like, be like, oh, I'm not a fan of Paige anymore because she's not playing well. Like, especially disc golf, which is a pretty, like, buddy-buddy, like, we love the players, like, they're our family type community. Like, no, I don't think so. And especially, like, Discraft is not going to treat her any differently, at least at this point, because, you know, obviously they pay her well and they love her at Discraft. So, no, I mean, it is kind of like we've talked about, like, it's shifting to that new norm of, like, players not winning as much as they used to anymore. And, like, that's going to happen. And we haven't even had all the really good European players over yet. Yeah. So it's going to get even harder for her to, you know, get back to that kind of dominance she had. But you also remember that the sport continues to grow. So even as she may not be picking up fans from already within the sport, as fans go in, she's still considered the most popular female player, or one of them at least. So I don't think it's going to have a huge, like, big impact or anything.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right, though, that the bigger storyline, probably the biggest storyline, was Katrina Allen's performance, specifically her performance in round two. Now, something that I found very interesting when I was looking at this is this is just what she's capable of. So if you look at her, round one and round three were not, like, out of this world spectacular rounds. Round one, she shot an 8 down. You had three players that shot 7 down.
Mm-hmm.
Round three, I forget what she shot, but I don't think she was a hot round for that day.
No, maybe like 6 or 7.
Yeah. Decent rounds, but that's like a normal, I feel like those were both normal Katrina Allen rounds.
Yeah.
Round two, she shot 12 down, which is seemingly, oh my word, she just popped off. What actually changed there? If you look at her stats across all three rounds, the only thing that seriously changed was her putting.
Yeah.
Her putting went from, I think, mid-60s, mid-70s, up to 90%.
Yeah.
The rest of her stats literally did not change. I think the biggest one was fairway hit went up 10%, mm-hmm. but we were talking about this in the follow-up. That's not really that big of an improvement, because it seems like it is, but if you improve 10% fairway hit, that's like one more fairway,
right?
Or a fairway and a half more, something like that. So it's not like that gained her so many strokes. It was literally just her putting that separated her here. And to me, if I'm Kat right now, that is a huge confidence boost to me, because now I've seen it and I'm like, look, like, that, like, I just beat the entire field by overall this tournament 8 strokes, pretty much solely because of my round two. And the only thing that changed about my game, it wasn't like I just was playing perfect. Only thing that really changed about my game was I was making my putts.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, we've always said that if Kat's putter, you know, she figures it out and gets confident in it, like, she's going to be really dangerous. And it's seems like it's starting to happen this year. And yeah, I mean, right now she's the player to beat for sure.
Yeah. I mean, she's been around all season. She's always up there. This is her first, like, dominant win, at least that I know of, over mm-hmm. Paige. And, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that it's been said for, I feel like, years now of it's just her putting, but it's hard to believe it because you'd never see it. And you're like, yeah, well, it can't just be her putting.
Right.
If you look at the stats, it's just her putting.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. I've said it so many times. I legitimately believe Katrina Allen is the most talented thrower of the disc in the FPO field. I think she's the best thrower. It's just that she's not the best putter.
Yeah.
And that's what holds her back. And round two proved it. All she did was change up her putting. The final storyline from this was Macy Walker.
Mm-hmm.
New name. You might not have ever heard of her. She kind of burst onto the scene here. She was able to claim Throw Peak Women's Disc Golf Championship, which is kind of like the U.S. Women's type of event, USDGC type of event, claimed a spot alongside Kona Panis and finished fourth overall. Now, one thing we have to mention here is fourth place was still a decent distance off the lead.
Yeah.
I think she shot 6 down, and I believe that was like 7 behind Sarah Hokum in third, 9 behind Paige, which makes it 17 behind the win.
Sure, yeah.
So very impressive fourth place, yeah. But it's not like she was in there competing for the win. After right. round one, though, she was. Mm-hmm. She was seven down. She was one of the seven downs. This is her first loss of 2021, yeah. Which is also impressive. I could not find information if she's planning on like touring, like if she's just kind of ready to go on the road, or if this was a kind of in the area type thing. But yeah. I would imagine with a performance like this, it's got to be in the back of her mind that right. she knows what she's capable.
No, yeah, looking at her like local stats, it seemed like she's been like just dominating her local scene, which is what you should do before you ever test the waters on tour. So yeah, I don't know if she's thinking about it or not, but yeah, after you have finishes like that, I'm sure you start thinking, like, if you really are into disc golf, you probably start thinking, huh, like maybe I could make a living off this sport. Like, it probably surprises some people, like they go out there and they're like, oh, I'm better than I thought I was.
Yeah,
so yeah, we might see a new name on the FPO tour soon.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting to kind of see her have a performance like that, and hopefully something that she is able to repeat over and over kind of throughout the season. One final Jonesboro storyline did not come from the course, but came from social media, which was Brody Smith's Twitter yet again. I feel like it's been a while since we've got a storyline from Brody Smith's Twitter, here it is. So initially, he just put out a tweet with a screenshot of the Jonesboro payout, and his whole point was on the players pack, because all the players got a mug and I think a dinner that was the players pack, right? And he was saying, I really wish that money would just go back into the pot.
Yeah, it was like $5,500 in the breakdown was like
players pack
allocated. It just said players pack. Yeah.
Which Jeff Spring quickly replied and stated those are just donated items and an assumed value was assigned to them. Getting rid of them wouldn't actually add to the pro purse. So no storyline there.
Problem solved, right?
That's it. Well, people from that post started making other comments regarding the actual payout. So someone responded and said they should only pay 30, in my opinion. About $7,000 more to spread out and can make first place $10,000. Every Pro Tour event should give $10,000 to first. Jeff Spring replies, PDGA policy is top 40% cash and for good reason. Purses continue to grow. That's what gets us to 10K, not redistribution. We're getting there one step at a time. The $27,500 added cash here is an achievement for the event team. Disc Golf Pro Tour purses are trending in the right direction. You know, he's right. The $27,500 added cash is a huge achievement. We'll talk about the rest of it in a second. Another response said, I 100% agree that payouts need to be much more top-heavy. Someone placing 29th shouldn't get $500. That seems crazy. Jeff Spring responds, tied 30th right now, shot 1027, and someone like Brian Earhart, for example, a touring pro, definitely can use the $500 payout he's earning from a great performance to keep his touring season solvent. Very difficult to come in top 30 Disc Golf Pro Tour Elite Series events.
Before you get into it, I just want to make one quick comment. The fact that he uses the argument of, well, 30th place shot 1027, basically saying, like, it's so hard to even get 30th, that's irrelevant. Like, that's
complete. You came in 30th.
Yeah, you still came in 30th. Like,
you lost to 29 players.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it's just harder to come in the top 29.
Yeah, like, that whole, like, throwing the rating thing in there, I was like, that is completely irrelevant. Like, I understand how hard it is to play on tour and disc golf. Like, I couldn't even sniff a rating that high. But, like, there are guys that can beat that every single week. So let's not punish them because of how hard it is to come in 29th. So
all right, let's do
now
this.
Now you can go ahead.
Okay. This is probably
going to be ridiculous.
This is probably going to be me talking for a little bit, and then we'll get Trevor's input after. I've got a lot of research here.
I think I have some notes on this.
Got a lot of numbers here. So first I want to tackle the redistribution part. Okay, specifically, he says, purses continue to grow. That is what gets us to $10,000, talking about $10,000 going to first place, not redistribution. So let's look at it. If we take this same purse and plug it into the payout calculator that we use for the Balfour Bedford and all these events, and we pay out 50 players, so still 40% of the field, the exact same added cash that they used, this is the MPO purse, last cash takes home $240, okay, which that's more than what they paid to enter.
Yeah.
It's less than what they would get. I think they got $330, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So a little bit less, $90 less. And first place takes home $10,105, a $4,000 increase. $4,000, that got us to $10,000 with redistribution right there. Not a single dollar more came in, and we didn't cut any players that are getting paid, simply redistributed it. Since 30 place was the spot that Jeff Spring used, let's look at that spot specifically. In this place, with the redistribution, 30 place takes home $375 instead of $490, so he lost $120. Now, people, I can already hear you commenting. We want to argue 30th place needs that money to tour. They need that money to tour. How dare you take that money from them? So let's look at it, right? So, for the people who want to argue that, we're sacrificing $120 from 30th place, but let's look deeper at this. Jeff Spring brought up Brian Earhart, so we're going to look specifically at him for this year. Year-to-date, he has made $2,265 from tournament earnings. These events, he's had to pay roughly $900 in entry fees. Okay, we're not going to assume that his entry fees are covered. They could be, but if you're looking at someone who's coming in 30th place regularly or around that, you know, it's hard to imagine a sponsorship deal is paying his entry fees. But for this, we're going to estimate, put those in. So $900 in entry fees are being taken out. This equates to him getting $341.25 a month. So let's just pause there for a second, and I think we can all acknowledge that he's not living solely on this.
No.
He's not living solely on $341.25 a month. Nobody in his shoes is living solely on that, because that wouldn't even cover your travel expenses on the road. Okay. So this is where I think our mindset needs to shift. It's not the Pro Tour's responsibility to make sure 30th place can survive on the road, because if it is, they're not doing a good job at it right now. Yeah. Because $341. But let's keep looking at this, right? You also have to remember 30th place isn't even cashing every week, because someone who's in 30th place is going to spike up some weeks and spike down some weeks. So we're going to keep with Brian Earhart. We're going to use the redistribution method, okay, for every event that he's played this year. It's only four. I went through and did that. So right now he's at $2,265 on tournament earnings. If all those earnings had redistributed to where it was more top heavy, he would be at $2,147. He would lose $118 over the course of this year so far.
Right.
Once you factor in the entry fees and divide it out, that's $311.75 a month that he would be getting. So he'd be losing $30 a month so that our winners could be taking home $10,000.
Right.
And that is without adding a single dollar to the Pro Tour purse. That's without taking a single dollar out of the Pro Tour purse. That's with still paying 40% of the field, and you're barely sacrificing anything, $30 a month to the player coming in 30th place. Yeah. That's not making a huge difference in him being on tour or him not being on tour.
Sure.
And we're paying the top player $10,000. I mean, how many more times do I have to keep saying this? Redistribution is the answer for right now if we want to give the top players this type of money. $6,000? Is that making headlines?
No.
No. Is the purse of $27,000 added cash making headlines outside of the sport? No.
No.
Is someone making $10,000 winning a disc golf tournament? Possibly.
Better chance.
Probably. A lot better chance. When someone made $20,000, we had a lot of people talking about it, did we not?
Right, yeah.
So if these players are making $10,000 winning week in and week out, that's going to do so much more for the growth, and we're not sacrificing pretty much anything. Like, I don't want to hear about 30th place because I just broke it down for you. This is not changing how they live on the road. $30, what is that? He's driving an RV. It's not even half a tank of gas. That's not... Like, what is he sacrificing there?
Yeah.
And at some of these tournaments, he ends up making more money, because now if he places higher, he's actually getting more money. So someone in his shoes who already, it's obvious, he's not living on just tournament winnings, right? He's got to have, he has tour series discs, he's probably doing clinics, he's got tons of other income, tons of other streams of income to keep him on the road. I am sure that these players would be willing to be like, yeah, you know what? I'll sacrifice that $30 because I think I'm going to get there someday. He's not on the road to just happy to stay in 30th place.
If these players are
fully touring and their dream is to be a touring disc golfer, the majority of them think I can get in that top 20. I can get there.
Yeah, probably top 20, yeah.
So then why would they not want the chance at making more money?
Yeah.
Because the higher you go up this leaderboard, eventually this number of you're losing $30 a month shifts to where now you're making hundreds of dollars more a month.
Right, right.
As you go up the leaderboard. I don't know. Every time I read stuff like that, it just gets me going because...
Yeah.
If you look at it and you actually break it down and you actually do the math, then that's not true. Like, it's not true. Redistribution can get us there. I agree.
Yeah.
The purses should continue to grow. As the purses grow, though, then the purses growing don't get us to $10,000. We're already there.
Mm-hmm.
We have the money to get to $10,000 right now. Purses don't grow to get us to 10. The purses grow to get us to 20. Purses grow to get us 15, 20, 30.
Right.
If we continuously don't redistribute this the right way as we grow, and he also at one point said, look at the PGA. This is the PGA. Like, what I did basically almost exactly matches up with how the PGA does payout.
Yeah.
So I did look at the PGA, and we're not close.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. So, first of all, I do think when he mentioned, like, Earhart and whoever needing, like, that $500 to tour, I don't think he's talking about it in the sense of he's living off of it. I think he's more saying, like, that might pay for his groceries for that month. Like, it's part of what helps him make a living. Because if you think about it that way, $300, you know, it does make a little bit of difference. Although,
but you're not, it's $311 versus $340.
Right. I do agree that redistribution of the pot is a lot less dramatic than the Pro Tour guys make it sound.
Yeah.
Like, it is very slight. Like you mentioned, $30 a month. Like, I think we can let that one slide. If $30 a month makes or breaks you, you probably shouldn't be on the tour.
Yeah, like go paint, find a painting job for 3 hours a month and you got your $30 back.
DoorDash. You could literally DoorDash for like three nights and you just made it back.
And you just made your $30 back.
There we go. DoorDash needs to be an official partner.
We always have to remember that the Disc Golf Pro Tour, these players are not Disc Golf Pro Tour employees.
Right.
These players are playing in tournaments and competing.
Here's like, let me like try and like, if I'm sitting in the Pro Tour's shoes, though, they're in a tough spot. And the reason why they're in a tough spot is because they're a young enough tour that I think they're still really trying to stay on the good side of the majority of the players. And when we talk about disc golf, like we just talked about the beginning of the show, there's about 3 to 5 guys that have a chance of winning. So they can't side with those guys as much as they have to side with the other 50. So like they're trying to make everybody happy, which I think is a problem with disc golf sometimes, but like I think they're just such infancy right now that they're just trying to keep everybody wanting to play on the Pro Tour.
Here's my problem, right? Is because another thing people say is you need those low spots. Maybe I'll have to do this math next week. You need those low spots to make the purses this. No, you don't.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
I know that's not what you're saying.
I'm saying they want the people. I don't think they're talking about the money when they talk about those spots. They want the guys because disc golf is tight-knit community. They want all the guys on the same tour.
But what I'm saying is if you're trying to keep those lower – first off, if you did this next week, half the players probably aren't even noticing.
I agree. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I agree. I understand that. I'm just coming right back with you. Half the players probably aren't even noticing. And if they do, and Brian Earhart's looking at that, and he's not thinking. I mean, I can't speak for him.
Yeah.
Okay. But in my head, I'm not looking at it and thinking, oh my word, I might sacrifice $100 this week, but now I have the chance to win $10,000.
Yeah.
If I win.
I'll say this though too.
Who's competitive on tour and is upset at that?
Right. I'll say this too. Like I do think there are a lot of complacent pros that are just cool with like trying to get around 20th to 30th place and like just like stay alive on tour. I think not too long from now, maybe 5 years from now, the Pro Tour can do whatever they want. And if a player's like, oh, I can't do this, like this is so unfair at the payout, there'll just be somebody else that'll just be like, well, then I'll take your spot on the Pro Tour. Because the field of disc golfers that are good is just getting larger and larger. So once it gets to the point where, A, the Pro Tour is the tour, they've established themselves, and there's just no question that they're the entity for the future. And B, there's such a larger pool of guys who are really good, then they can do whatever they want with the payout because, like I said, like if a guy is like, well, I can't afford to do this or I just don't want to do it, it's not fair, there'll just be somebody else who'll just whoop, 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 walk right into
that
spot.
Is that not the case right now?
I'm not sure because we see the same names on tour very consistently and every once in a while somebody pops in. But I don't know if the 30th to 50th place just fell off the face of the earth. I don't know if 20 guys could step in and would A, be willing to do that because of how hard it is to tour, and B, would be good enough. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, you also have to remember right
it's
now.
To test those waters.
Right now, it probably would still fill from players within 3 hour radius.
That's also true, but it's not. Here's another point for the Pro Tour is they want to have a tour because they want the same names to be recognized these weeks. So I think what they're doing, and I think what Jeff Springs is getting at, and I still think the pot should be redistributed because I think you can do that, but I think what Jeff Springs' big thing is he's trying to keep the same 50 guys or whatever consistently touring to build familiarity with the tour field. And like I kind of understand what he's going with, but like I said, I think it's just going to be a matter of the sport growing financially and like more good players coming around. Cause like right now on the PGA Tour, if some dude who's consistently coming in 50th place just said, I'm not doing this anymore. I mean, just like look at your local, you know, there's a golfer within 50 miles of you right now who is really good at golf. Like there's so many good golfers, but disc golf, it's a little harder. Like you might have a local tournament and have like two guys maybe in the pro field that are rated over 1,000. You might not even have a single one. You know, so like I think it's just a little bit more sparse, but it's quickly trending upwards to where people keep getting into the game. And they're like, look at Brody Smith, an athletic guy with a frisbee background. He is a top 20 professional, and it took him less than a year practically. Like, so as more guys like him decide to get into the sport, guys who have athletic backgrounds who are committed to it, that field will grow, but I think Springs is just trying to like
just like be careful. I'm still trying to figure out how, if you just did this, this isn't a big announcement, because right now, how people decide,
I just don't think he wants to rock the boat.
How's it rocking the boat? How people decide payout right now? How do people even know?
People make.
If I asked you what percentage of the purse first place takes home?
I mean, it's been a pretty relevant topic though. Like,
no one knows.
Brody tweeting out the payout scale like every week, he would tweet about it, and then everybody would know. Like, somebody we would talk about it, and then everybody would know. Like, somebody will know because sports information gets out.
Yeah, but I'm saying is, would there actually be enough players that
and you know those touring pros are scouring. They scour those payout scales, I'm sure.
If next week,
yeah,
let's say DDO, let's just say 2 weeks from now, not even on the Pro Tour, they did this. They redistributed the purse and did this way. How many players are not playing?
Not playing? Absolutely zero. But would there be some like a bit of like anger around it, a little bit of like not so sure about the Pro Tour, possibly. I don't think you could ever rock the boat enough to legitimately like,
well, if get you players change it to where striking. You were only paying out 25,
right, but field. I'm saying with this redistribution, I don't think it's ever going to rock the boat enough to like legitimately like these guys are going to strike and form their own tour. I think they're just a little bit scared of it.
That's
and
what I'm
I
saying. Think, what are they? What? But that's what I'm trying to get at, is what are you scared of?
I what? Think, yeah.
You're scared of them still playing the tour, but just not being happy with you?
Well, that's a legitimate thing, because they know, like, even
what
as much
they,
as...
What is the how, 40th you gotta weigh, to 60th place? What are they going to do if they're a little upset because they made 90 bucks
less? You just
got to
weigh risk versus reward, because, okay, so, like, risk is making maybe 30 players in our field of, like, a 30 players to 35 players in a field of 50 angry.
That's not accurate, because if you're looking at it, right, the players who might slip down in there, the 30 to 50, that is going to be mixed with local pros.
No, but you got to remember,
players that are actually even, top 15 players, okay, that would be happy with this.
Even no, top 15 players, even if they are okay because they're going to get more money, these guys are like brothers on tour. They're going to be all talking about how Brian Earhart can't make a living now, or Trevor Harbaugh.
Because he lost $30 a month?
I'm not saying it's rational. Remember, I agree with that point that you made about redistribution. I'm just saying, like, this is what
just
they
present
will
them
do.
With the facts. If someone says it, be like,
you know,
look,
you and I both know that people aren't a huge fan of facts these days, man. I'm just saying.
I'm saying if the Pro Tour, if someone said something to them and they're
when
like,
mess
look,
people's
we're
money,
able to use it.
When you mess with people's money and they're like making fragile livings on tour, even if it's a few bucks here, a few bucks there, they will go after you.
Well,
next,
what's the Pro
and
Tour,
each other's
what
next.
I think the bigger risk is the Pro Tour right now is very well established, right?
Yeah, it's pretty
but
well established, yeah.
If they still are young enough that if there was a tour that did it, and you, every weekend the winner is getting $10,000, they could still wipe the Pro Tour off the face of the earth right now.
Yeah, but it would take
and I have
before
heard
something like that
from
can get
reputable
organized.
Sources that the Pro Tour has been worried about stuff like that.
Yeah, I know, but it, before something like that could ever get formed, I think they would fix them, like they would fix their structure.
So
like,
if you know it's a problem and you would fix it if it got formed, then why are we just living with it as a problem?
Because I just don't think it's in their minds, it's just not a big enough problem yet. That's all.
See, I think that is one of the biggest things hindering the sport. Personally, is people will always look at when they look from the outside. They're not looking at contract numbers. They're not looking at any of that. They're looking
at
tournament
contract numbers.
There's only one to look at.
I know, but like as you know, that's gonna be the trend now. Though they'll look at contract.
We'll
numbers.
Have to see.
I don't know if they'll ever.
I don't
be
know
one
because
big enough to look at again.
Will there be ones that like? I feel like some players would be kind of embarrassed to release their contract.
Yeah,
numbers
that's what I'm saying.
Balls.
Like I don't know if how many will get released.
That's what I'm saying.
But
right up to this point, if you're looking in, you're looking at tournament winnings, and you're saying you're not caring that whatever had 30,000 added. You're saying that dude won a Pro Tour event, an Elite Series event, and took home $5,000.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
you're not
yeah.
looking at 30th place took home 500.
I think the five-figure mark when you hit 10,000, like $10,000, just sounds so much more than $9,000. Like I think the five-figure mark is a little bit significant. I'd like to see it get there. I don't know. I think it's an issue from somebody within the sport who like thinks that the guys who are winning, because I'm just a big fan of like guys who want to win on tour and are like cutthroat, and I'm a fan for like a cutthroat tour. That's
yeah,
why
that's another thing is why are we rewarding the guys that are in 30th place instead of rewarding the guys that have dedicated their life to being first?
That's what I'm saying. I'm a fan of like cutthroat tour cards, qualification, like earn it type thing. Like basically everything the Super League didn't stand for, if you guys ever followed that storyline. But yeah, a lot of disc golf is very much pro, let's scratch everybody's back. So that's why I mostly disagree with this payout structure, is because I like the whole idea, like, yeah, you got to go out and win. Like, I don't want guys on tour that are, like, just complacent. Like, I want guys who want to win. But I don't know. I'm not as angry about it as you are, but I do agree that, like, it, there's no reason it shouldn't be fixed.
I just don't understand it. Like, it's such an easily fixable problem. And what really bugged me is that, like, he literally goes, that's what gets us 10,000, not redistribution. Redistribution gets us 10,000. Like, I can run the numbers 10 different ways. We're there. Yeah. We're already here. Again, the money is in the sport. It's just not going to the right people.
Maybe next year.
And that's not even just talking about redistribution. There's money. Like, I don't even want to talk about half it.
You think we can get enough for Battle for Bedford next year to get to 10K?
I don't know. We'd have to raise a lot of added money. But I can tell you one thing. With 10,000 added cash to the Battle for Bedford, the winner of Battle for Bedford will be taking home more money than some of these Pro Tour events.
Yeah, it's true.
Or close to it. Silver Series, probably more than most Silver Series.
Yeah, yeah.
And guess what? I probably won't hear a complaint.
No, yeah.
Because who doesn't want to show up for a chance to win that?
It's a hot topic right now, man. It's a hot topic.
All right, it's time to cool things down.
I can't get fired up while you're fired up, because then things will just get loud. Somebody has to be like the ice. Somebody's got to be the fire. Because, you know, I get fired up about that if I wanted to.
One thing about it is, like, since we only talk about disc golf on the show, there's only so many topics to get into, right? But when you, like, week after week see a topic like this get brought up, and week after week see it get brushed to the side and the wrong answers get put out, I just get more and more and more ticked off.
I get that.
Because, like, the answer is in, like, it's right in front of you. It's sitting there.
I would pay a good bit of money to sit in on, like, Pro Tour board meetings and hear, like, what they talk about and see if there's just something that they know that we don't know, that which is like, oh, yeah, I didn't consider that. Or if it's just like, no, like, there's just not making any sense. Like, I just wonder. I wonder.
I mean,
what it's like in there.
If there was something, like,
to be a fly on the wall, you know?
I mean, surely they've run the numbers, and actually they haven't, because he says that's not what gets us 10K. Not, like, redistribution doesn't. If he had ran the numbers, he would know that.
I don't think he meant literally.
Well, then why would he tweet it?
I think that's what he meant. He meant, like, that's not the way we want to get to 10K.
That's what he should have said, but I still think it's wrong.
It was a tweet.
Well, I mean,
we all make typos.
Oh, that's not a typo.
You lose.
He spelled everything right. He even had proper, like, comma right after 10K. Like, he's perfect
Oxford,
grammar.
Oxford comma.
perfect grammar in here. Wasn't a typo.
All right, man.
Trevor's trivia. Can't wait to lose. At least I'll make $500.
Well, this is kind of a fun little trivia's. Trevia's?
Trevia.
That sounds like an artificial sweetener.
Trevia's?
Trevia.
That is. No, it's Trulia. Trulia is the artificial sweetener.
Anyways, today's segment is called Who's Taller? I like the really subtle, like, title. It's just Who's Taller? I quizzed Connor on this earlier, and I did get him on a few of these. So we're just going to get tough. It's head-to-head matchups.
Okay. This is going to be tough. I'm going to have to dig.
Yeah. I got two wrong, just to let you know, Hunter.
So two wrong? I got to beat two wrong.
I think you'll probably get the same two wrong, though.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that you just said that, but in any case.
Well, I mean,
it's all right. It's all right.
Well, he knows that you're trying to trick him with some of them. Like, it's a trivia game.
All right.
There's two he's going to trick me with.
First matchup is Paul McBeth versus Kevin Jones.
Kevin Jones is taller.
Yes. That was the easiest one. Kevin Jones is 5'10. Paul's 5'8.
That's the one I got wrong.
And then,
you really got that one wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next matchup, Calvin Heimberg versus Big Germ.
Big Germ.
Zero hesitation. How tall do you think Calvin is, by the way?
He's probably like 6'3".
6'5".
Oh, frick. How much is that as fro?
Oh. He used to have short hair, so, like, his measurement's probably from before then. But Big Germ's only 6'6". It's an inch difference.
Because,
like, I put that in there because, like, when we met Calvin in real life, he's freakishly tall.
Yeah, but when you meet Germ, you're like, wow. No wonder they call you Big Germ.
He's a big dude, though.
Calvin, no, but he's also stick. Like,
yeah, well, you're only an inch difference in height.
Well, I think it's his hair, man.
I don't think so. Anyways, next matchup, Ricky Wysocki versus James Conrad.
Oh, that's a close one, but I got to go Ricky.
Mm. See, it's actually not as close as you think. James Conrad's only 6'3".
Ricky's another guy that's
Ricky's
tall.
Ricky's 6'5".
You look at him and you're like, wow.
James Conrad, got that one wrong because I also thought James Conrad was taller than 6'3". I think it's just he's really lanky and he's got the long hair.
Yeah.
Man, 3 for 3 so far. This might be the toughest one yet. Simon Lazat versus Will Schustrick.
See, now you're going with players that I haven't seen a lot. No.
I've only seen
Will in person once, and I've only seen Simon like twice in person.
Yeah,
and I've never seen them close to each other. So that's completely irrelevant that I've even seen him in person. But I feel like Simon made me feel shorter, so I'm going Simon.
Incorrect.
Dang it.
Simon is actually only 6'1". You'd think he's taller, but Will is 6'2".
How much of that is hair? All right, so I'm down. I lost one of them.
Last matchup is Emerson Keith versus Paige Pierce.
Paige has got to be taller.
It's tied. Okay. Kind of fun. They're both 5'5". I just had to put that in there. Almost perfect. That Simon one was very tricky because I also thought, like, surely he's taller than 6'1".
Yeah, he just seems tall.
When it first popped up, it said his height was measured in centimeters, and it said, like, 6.07. And for some reason, I registered that as 6'7", and, like, I questioned my whole existence. I was like, I know Simon is not, like, guarding LeBron James. Like, but anyways, yeah. Disc golf heights, man.
I got that one wrong, too. The first one I told you I got wrong, I didn't actually
He's
get
a
wrong.
Trickster. I was proud of you.
Oh, you were trying to trick me?
I already disappointed Trevor so much.
Well, I was going to, like, when you said you got that one wrong, I was like, that was the hard one? I'm about to win all of these. That's
I tried to get in your head a little bit because I feel like I ruined the game for Trevor.
No, I appreciate that.
Well, what two did you actually get wrong?
I got
The Ricky and James one, and the Calvin.
Simon.
Will and Simon. Will and Simon. It seems like Simon, it's obvious.
I see. I thought if I pit Calvin versus Big Germ, you would think about it because you'd think I was trying to trick you by putting Big Germ against somebody because you'd think, oh, obviously pick Big Germ. He's the tall guy. I thought you'd think about it more.
Well, and see,
when you just
part
spat
of it,
out Big Germ, I was like, yeah. All right, well,
darn, well, part of it was I just saw like all of them at Waco.
Well, it was close.
And so
than
it's, I can just
for,
like
though.
In my head picture
Calvin freakishly tall.
How up did I look? Because I'm shorter than 95% of them.
How up did I look?
I am. I mean, I'm 5'10". So,
respect.
Yeah, pretty
man.
Much everyone on that list is taller than me, except for Paul and Emerson and Paige.
Respect.
How tall are you?
You're 5'11". I'm only got.
I'm 5'9½".
Heck yeah.
9½.
Let's just say we're all 5'10".
Can we all be 5'11"?
No.
Wait, what? There's some height that doesn't exist. People always say, "Is it 5'11"?
No, it's 6 foot. Because here's my thing with height.
No, it was in the
fives. If a man admits he is well. 5'10 a lot is like people say they're 5'10 or not. 5'11, if a man says he's 5'11 and not says he's 6 foot because he probably couldn't get away with it, he's 5'11 for sure.
Well, that's what I think. 5'11 is the height that doesn't
exist. If you say you're 5'11 because people rarely do, you are probably 5'11.
Yeah.
If you say you're 5'10, you're probably a little bit shorter, although I believe you.
I think technically I think I'm 5'11.
And if you say you're 6 foot, very unlikely.
Yeah.
because I mean, if I measure myself with my shoes on, I'm about 6 feet, but like 6 foot people on the dot very rarely exist. My dad might be one of the only ones that I've ever seen.
My dad's 6 foot on the dot.
Because like maybe like that earlier generation, they can get away with that. But like in our generation, if you say you're 6 foot, like we know you're 5'11".
I think 5'11 is the height that people say doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because people are like, if you're already at 5'11, why not just say you're 6 feet tall?
I was 5'10 and like a half for so long. And then like my last year, or like my first year of college, my last year of high school, I got to 5'11".
See, I think I'm like a little over 5'11 with my shoes on and 5'10 with my shoes off.
Yeah. I'm like 5'12 and a half.
So you're 6 foot and a half.
But I don't.
What did you just say?
It's a great joke.
I don't understand like why that. People try to exaggerate their heights. Like, doesn't make you that much cooler?
I think
there's
people
some
think
way,
like,
it's not like
the
it's
type of guy who will exaggerate their height is the type of guy who will think that's
gotcha.
Cool. Though.
Yeah, because it's not an accomplishment.
There's a correlation.
It's like
there.
I worked my
well,
whole
it all
life
started,
so that I could be 6 feet.
It all started when it was like a TikTok trend that like women were like. Minimum height 6 feet.
Another height that doesn't exist is 6'2", because if you're 6'2", you're gonna say you're 6'3", because 6'3" sounds awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so really, like, once you get over 6 foot, like who's 6'1"?
That's another height
and
that
people
doesn't
are 6'2". Everyone just rounds up. I mean, on our basketball roster in high school, we were all 6 foot or more or taller. All of us. I had a 5'8" point guard. He was 6 foot. Like we'd show up and we're just like a bunch of misfits, but I mean, you can put whatever you want on your roster. So
that's
then when you
point.
Look at who you're playing, it's like, oh man, dude, this whole team's 6 foot and their center's 6'10".
Until they get there and they're relieved.
Yeah, you get there you're
6'3½".
It causes a like existential crisis because you're like, am I 6 foot?
They
now?
Do that for like NBA draft boards, like people's heights get, and actually it goes both ways. Like guys will, who are like, want to play small forward, like Kevin Durant, people say he's like almost 7 feet, but he was like 6'9" listed on the draft because they wanted him to like fit his position more for the draft.
Yeah.
Goes both ways, man. I can't imagine being in those shoes, but anyways.
Yeah. I'm actually 5'7". Steers
back on track.
All right. This next one isn't really a talking, like, we're not going to have much to, like, debate. It was just kind of announced last Wednesday after we shot the podcast that the European Open is unfortunately canceled for this year.
Bummer.
It's another major that has been taken by COVID. After a difficult spring, this is from the organizers of the event, they said in an UltraWorld article, after a difficult spring full of uncertainty and much debate, the event organization came to the conclusion that the current COVID-19 situation in Finland and globally doesn't allow the event to be organized this season. The event organizers wrote in a press release, the international travel limitation, quarantines, limitations on gatherings, and other restrictions required to curb the spread of the virus have too severe of an effect on the event.
Yeah.
So, bummer. The writing was kind of on the walls. Everyone was hoping this was going to happen.
Yeah, it really depended on, like, European government decisions.
Well, honestly. Yeah, a second wave
it wasn't
going
in their
through,
hands.
Yeah, another wave is going through Europe right now, which I think is kind of raised the uncertainty because it's one of those things that come time of this event in June or July.
Right, you never know.
It might be cool. It might have been good mm-hmm. to go, but you have to make that call now, especially yeah. where a majority of your field is going to be coming from the U.S. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this one was probably the major that most people were like, I hope that happens, but probably not going to.
We only got two majors this year.
Yeah, we'll have the USDGC and Throw Pink Women's is replaced the Women's Nationals, right? When I was saying it earlier, I was like, well, is Women's Nationals still a major?
Throw Pink is an Innova thing still, though,
the
right?
The Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship.
And
yeah.
wasn't it always an Innova thing?
Well, last year it was the Women's National
but
Championship.
But was it still Innova?
Yes, it was the USDGC.
I think it's still the same event. They just like made it like the Throw Pink.
But
thing.
Last year, the Women's National Championship didn't take over U.S. Women's. It was just U.S. Women's got canceled.
Right.
They add an event with USDGC.
Right.
Connor, can you Google this?
Yeah.
See if U.S. Women's is happening this year. I didn't think about it until this podcast started. And we're talking about the Throw Pink.
How would it be, though, if they didn't have qualification spots in like any of the events?
Well, U.S. Women's normally doesn't have qualification. I don't think.
Oh, it's an open?
I'm pretty sure. Because the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship doesn't really mention like United States in
man,
it at all.
Need more majors with qualification. It's so cool.
It is. It gives so many cool, storylines too. But yeah, because I was thinking that too. Is like the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship, it doesn't have United States in it.
Yeah.
So it makes you think like the United States Women's is still happening.
Yeah, maybe I feel like it's happening. Maybe the women get three majors.
Why do
this
I
year?
Feel like it's happening? No, because then Throw Pink wouldn't be a major if the women's national.
Then why are they qualifying for it? It's not a major.
Bro, you're making me question my whole existence right now. I'm Connor. You Google the.
I think it's taking place.
You
of,
Google
like,
U.S.
women's.
I'm googling Throw Pink women's.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you said so. U.S. women's the Throw Pink women's disc golf championship is on USDGC.com.
Yes. Okay. What is look up U.S. women's?
So just U.S. women's, not okay.
Yeah, I want to see if that's happening. I'm gonna look up the Throw Pink Women's to see if it's a major. Here's this. It's a XA tier. So the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship is a A tier, happening in Rock Hill, so on USDGC courses, which is why it's an XA tier, which makes me think that U.S. Women's is happening.
Interesting.
Because this isn't a major; it'll just happen the same time as USDGC, and be the same event as Women's National last year.
Yeah, okay. What about so? What were you just? Do you still need anything?
I need the U.S. Women's.
The U.S. Women's. It says date is 21st of May to 23rd of May 2021.
Okay, so that's the next major.
Yeah,
there it is.
Where is it?
I think it's in California.
It is in.
This is
California.
All coming back to me. Yeah, I definitely knew this was happening.
Yeah. Orange Trail, this whole, the whole Rockland, Throw Pink. Auburn, California. I'm guessing are those different cities in California?
Yeah. The whole Throw Pink in qualification just threw me for a loop because I just immediately replaced U.S. Women's with it in my head when that shouldn't happen. So yeah, the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship will happen the same time as USDGC. USDGC is a major for the men's, but U.S. Women's is a major for the women's division, FPO. Gotcha. That's happening in May.
Okay.
So there are two events, completely separate. One's not a major.
All right.
Back on track. We're back here. All right. Final talking point here. The Mid-America Open. Before we get into predictions and stuff, one interesting thing is on Tuesday, The Disc Golf Pro Tour announced that they're having to move the event away from Harmony Bends due to unsafe course conditions. This comes after pretty much a freak snowstorm and a pretty poor weather forecast for the event. On their website, they said, "We are disappointed," or this might have been, this is on O2 World, I believe. "We are disappointed that we are unable to play at Harmony Bends, one of the highest rated courses in the world," said Disc Golf Pro Tour director and CEO Jeff Springs. It's actually Jeff Spring. Why do I always add an S at the end of his name? That's irrelevant right now.
We all do.
Disc Golf Pro Tour director and CEO Jeff Spring. "However, we knew this was a possibility and prepared to move forward if this scenario were to arise. We are happy to still be able to offer our competitors the opportunity to play a Silver Series event and earn tour points. So players will now play at the back course at Albert Oakland Park." Now, I do not know anything about that course.
Yeah,
I've never even heard of it.
I'm like,
it's definitely going to be interesting.
High key, like, pleased and impressed that the Pro Tour had a contingency plan and would like just like kind of rolled with the punch and smoothly acted on it.
Yeah.
That's good for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting because so now that was announced on Tuesday.
Yeah.
The event starts on Friday, I believe. So there's still plenty of time for players to learn this course. It's definitely going to be interesting though, like, what is this course going to look like?
Yeah.
The back course, because I would imagine most areas.
I'm sure they had that course picked out.
Yeah. Most areas though don't have two Pro Tour caliber courses.
Right.
Like, I guess for us, it would be like, it's at New London, and we move it to Independence Park, which is like still good. But
Albert, what is it?
Albert Oakland Park. It's the back course.
It's got a 4.1 on U-Disc. Yeah. Okay.
How tough is it?
It's got Mach 3 baskets.
Oh, that'll be fun to watch. Well, I mean, it's a Silver Series, so I guess it's not.
I mean, I'm scrolling through pictures.
What's the distance it's looking like?
It does. Let's look at the scorecard. The pictures don't look like crazy. The actual layout. Oh, 5,600 feet.
That's the course?
Yeah.
5,600?
It's really short. And it's all par threes. There has to be. Oh, here it is. They have a Mid-America.
Thank goodness.
Okay, it's still, hey, though, it's only 6,300 feet. It's still pretty short par three heavy. Like, we're talking 288, 316, 255, 320, 295.
I'm starting to feel a lot better about my pick.
There's a lot of short holes and only a couple par fours. Or wait, what is there? There's one par four, and it's 458.
Wow.
Yikes. So they had a contingency plan, but they must not have had a lot of good options. And it is about to be birdie or die. Like, it is about to be serious birdie or die golf out there.
Yeah. What's interesting too, another like kind of storyline of this is next weekend. So not this upcoming weekend, the weekend after that is the DDO.
Right.
The DDO starts on a Wednesday. I believe they're playing two courses, but regardless, if you play the Mid-America Open, then you're going to have to travel, get in town. You might only have like 2 days of practice for the DDO, which is a national tour. So there's a lot of players. Ricky, Brody, I know, had posted about it. I forgot who else. There's a few other players, though, that have decided just to skip Mid-America and go straight to DDO to start prepping for that so that they can have a full week and a half of prep versus coming from Mid-America. Mm-hmm. What I think is the bigger storyline here is that Paul is not one of those players.
No.
Which is kind of weird because he's almost...
Yeah,
prioritizing a Silver Series over prep for the DDO, which maybe he's just saying, I know these courses, the DDO courses so well.
I imagine his thought was like, I've played the DDO courses quite a few times in my career. Like, I don't think having that extra day of practice is really going to make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're still, by staying in competition, you're still keeping yourself tuned up, you know, mentally especially. So, yeah, I think
the tough part now is he's going to be going from seemingly a pitch and putt to a
maybe that was also opposite. His thought though, he's like, it won't be hard on him, like it'll just kind of be an easy
But he didn't make the decision when it was at a pitch and putt. He made the that's decision when it was at Harmony Bends.
That's also true.
For predictions, I wrote this and now I have an even better feeling. I said, I don't know why, but I have a pretty good feeling about Dickerson this weekend. And now that I know it's a short tactical wooded course, I have an even better feeling about Dickerson. I do have Paul in second. I mean, looking at the field, I really wanted to pick Paul. It was kind of hard not to.
Yeah.
And I have Conrad coming in third, which, again, mm-hmm. I kind of feel pretty good about that now that I know it's a short technical course.
Yeah. I have Paul in first, Conrad in second, and Kevin Jones in third. I'm trying to see if Kevin Jones, with a fourth place finish, I believe it was fourth place last week, gets a little momentum and it's an easier course. Although, now that I know how short the course is, and I think putting is going to be huge, so I still love my Conrad and Paul picks. But Kevin Jones is not Now, he makes a lot of outside the circle putts.
And that could be big on a
short course. And that could be big on a short course, so we'll see. But this putters are going to be huge. So this Dickerson's not a bad pick.
Yeah, this could be a good week to see some people like sneak in there that you're not really used to.
Yeah.
On the FPO side, I've got... Yeah, I'm sticking with these. Heather Young, taking it down. I have Sarah Hocum coming in second. She's been on a hot streak recently.
Yeah.
And then I have Rebecca Cox coming in third. So I got the Tennessee takedown. Chris Dickerson and Heather Young. Is Heather Young from Tennessee? Yeah, she is.
I think so.
Connor's fact checking. Double check.
See, I think the FPO field, I mean, to snub Missy Gannon right there with the golf she's been playing lately is pretty ridiculous. But I went literally with the three highest rated players because I think they're pretty separated.
Because you're boring.
From the pack. No, I think they're pretty separated from the pack. I went Hocum, Missy Gannon. Yeah. There you go. Missy Gannon in second, Heather Young in third. Because like I just don't see those three players at a short, easy course. I think their ratings being higher than the pack will prove out.
See, there's a difference between you and I. I know ratings don't mean anything when it comes to how a player's about to play. So I go Heather Young, Sarah Hocum, Rebecca Cox.
I mean, when there's a 20-point difference between their rating from like the third best rating to like the next, there's a little bit there.
We'll see this weekend.
Okay. What about your dark horse pick?
Yeah, that's what I'm about to get into. All right, let's see. Let's hear our dark horse picks and the reasoning. We'll let Connor start. Connor.
There you go.
Who's your dark horse pick? Oh, tell us why.
I don't really want to start, but I will.
Have you made your dark horse pick yet?
I had between a few different ones, and I was going to hear what you guys had to say.
Oh, I really put you on the hot seat.
But, you know, I feel good about it. I'm going to go real dark horse. I'm going to get freaky, as you will. And I'm going to go with a 979 rated player.
Okay.
You love picking the low rated guys.
I do, because it's helped me the past 2 weeks.
What are the odds of that, though? Like, there's no way that happens.
So far, 100%.
Yeah. No way. There's just no way that's going to happen again. Like, no way.
Okay, well, I'm going with a guy from the area, from Columbia. And so I am going to go with Brock Roehler, R-O-H-L-E-R. Nice. Purely because he's from that area, so I think he's going to be used to the weather. And now
no
I feel
one's used to this weather. Snow in the end of April.
Well, he's used to playing in this weather, though. Like, you know, he probably practices it in a lot.
Grow up.
Come on, man.
And so,
grow up.
And
so demoralizing.
Nobody wants to hear that.
Like, come on, man.
Nobody
grow
wants
up.
To hear that.
So I feel 24. Good choosing him. And especially with it being on a smaller course, you know, he might be a part of a weekly that plays that course often. Who knows?
You never know.
That's actually valid.
Yeah.
So I also picked a local guy. He's from Kansas City, and he's 994 rated, and his name is John Jones because
that's John Cena.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of John Jones, the UFC Champ fighter, so
that's
I figured.
The right one.
Although that John Jones is spelled J-O-N, not J-O-H-N. This is J-O-H-N, John Jones. But
one more letter of
pain. If you let me down, John
J-O-H-N
Jones.
J-O-H-N is just a little too pretentious.
What?
Do you even know this guy?
No.
Anyways,
well,
if you let me down,
John,
I cannot lose for 3 weeks in a row. Like, what are the odds of that?
Well, I hate to tell you guys, but I'm definitely winning. I don't know my player's location that he's from. I don't know my player's rating. Heck, I don't even know what he's been doing this year. But I picked this guy for one name, one reason,
one
and
name.
One reason only, and that's because of his name, Mr. Maximus Meyer.
Maximus Meyer. You don't know his
you
rating?
You can't. I have no idea. I looked at it. It's in the 980s.
Okay.
You can find him, Connor. Maximus, you can't lose with a name like Maximus. He might win it all. He might take down Chris.
985.
Great.
Boom. That puts me kind of on the edge of the rating contingency, right? What's your rated?
994.
Yeah, and 979. So if I tie with you,
yeah,
I win.
You're right.
You're picking two high-rated players, man.
Well,
it's gonna keep
all I
got
to do is beat one person. Like, I don't think it should be that difficult, and yet it's proving to be, so.
All right, it's time to wrap up the show with a pretty interesting make that call, if I do say so myself.
Oh, boy.
Let's put you in a scenario here.
Okay.
So, Trevor,
yeah.
Congratulations. You are playing in the United States Disc Golf Championship.
How did that happen?
It's your first... Well...
Who'd I have to kidnap?
I'll explain some stuff in this scenario.
Okay.
You're on your first round, and you make it to hole five. After a bomb tee shot, you decide to go for the green. You can throw about 800 feet in the scenario.
Yeah, I was about to say.
On your throw... A foot fault is called and seconded, and then your disc ends up in the OB water. Okay, so there's a foot fault on your throw. disc ends up in the OB water.
Okay.
Where are you throwing from, and what are you throwing from that lie?
Man, see, they've changed these rules because it used to be that you got a warning on your first, like, footfall.
That part is not super important, so I will tell you it is a penalty right away on the first
footfall. Which I was going to go with because I know they changed it.
So it's more so which one's enforced and where are you throwing from?
Yeah, so this is interesting because my initial thought is the throw does not count. It is disqualified because of the footfall, and you rethrow from where you did with the penalty stroke. The fact that you mentioned OB water, once again, is one of those scenarios. I'm going to be mad at the PDGA if they like double penalize that shot for it going in the water. If you're going to say a shot doesn't count with a footfall, then it shouldn't matter where the disc ends up. So that's what I'm saying. One stroke added, you throw from the same spot.
Okay, partially right. You're mainly wrong because you don't understand the footfall rule, I don't think. New footfall rule is you play from where it lies with a one-stroke penalty.
I did not know that was the new rule.
So that's why the OB is the issue.
Incredibly dumb rule.
So the new rule, because that's the issue before was it was a warning and you threw from your previous spot. So some players were able to get an advantage because...
If you're saying that a footfall is like an incorrect throw, like a wrong throw, then that throw should not count. That's bamboozling.
Well, what happened previously, the previous rule that they fixed was, because this happened
the
at
warning,
USGC.
I remember the warning rule.
The warning.
Well, yeah, that
and
was
you threw
whack.
From where? So what it basically ended up happening was, I believe it was an Eric Oakley with Ricky situation on hole 5 at USGC, which is why I came to this. Ricky threw, going for the green.
He went in the water.
Yeah, Eric called him on a footfall, and someone seconded it. The footfall happened first, meaning the throw from the water is eliminated, basically, because he got to re-tee. And then he made it onto the green.
And it didn't even cost him
and
anything.
Nothing. It didn't cost him at all.
I think the warning rule is always stupid, but I still think you should throw from where you just threw. So, and like throw a correct shot.
Yeah. So now that you throw from where you lie, from your lie, and there's OB, that's why this scenario is so interesting. So the answer is a player's first stance violation results in a penalty throw. In this case, there are multiple violations. Normally, the first violation to occur is the one that counts. In this case, that's the footfall. Though it doesn't really matter as it's one penalty throw either way. There's no rethrow, so the disc is played as OB. Since a player cannot receive penalty throws for multiple violations on a single throw, there's one penalty throw. So basically, he'd be playing from where it crossed with one penalty throw. Effectively, that the footfall didn't really matter.
Yeah, which I guess that's okay. It all kind of works out. But here's where I think this is a problem. Let's say you're playing some like long wooded hole where like literally par is a great score on this hole, right? And you throw your first drive, and it's whatever. You're throwing your second shot. Yeah. You throw your second shot, and you footfall, and you throw a beauty of a shot. You thread the needle. It's like a one in a million type shot, and you're under the basket. And now you're tapping out for par, which you're like, hey, I footfalled it. I get away with it. That's still a great throw. And let's say your footfall was so bad that you kind of even went to the left of your lie and it helped you get around a tree you shouldn't have been able to get around. So therefore, you actually got an advantage and you get par, which is a great score, when you should be taking a penalty and having to throw a shot from correctly behind your lie and having to throw that really hard shot again. Do you like see what I'm saying there?
I do, but I feel like in 95% of footfalls, that's too much of a penalty.
Too much of a penalty.
Because this could be a footfall. This could be my disc, and I plant my foot, and I just barely kick it.
Nobody calls that, though. It's called there's like golf etiquette.
But that is still a footfall.
But there's golf etiquette involved in footfall where like you only call a guy at a footfall.
I have seen
when it was a clear advantage.
Yes and no. There has been situations where players have called that because it is technically against the rules.
Yeah, but like that's the game of golf. We've talked about this before. Like the game of golf will always have rules that you can call on when you're just being mean.
But like, let's just and say, there's but no if, point. If in your scenario. Because if someone intentionally ran up and threw this far left, that's gross misplay. That's a whole different rule.
No, I'm not saying it was intentional. Like I'm saying like they might have been like a couple inches to where it made a difference and it was advantage, but it's not like it was like they were purposely trying to do it or anything.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is I feel like that's too much of a punishment for just a footfall. Because a lot of them are accidental. Pretty much all of them are accidental.
It's so rare, though. Footfalls are really rare.
Well, yeah, that's because now you have like a full sheet of paper
behind
your disc.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not that hard to avoid the accident, you know?
Correct.
So
but
like I don't.
At the end of the day,
I don't have a problem with.
It's not like you messed up. It's not like you threw OB and like that type of thing.
I just don't have a problem with one stroke and a rethrow. I don't think it's that bad.
In your scenario, the guy could take a par when he deserves a birdie because he threw a great shot and just messed up a little bit. Or, now in your scenario, he's having to come all the way back, and he might take a double bogey.
No, he doesn't deserve bogey. The birdies through a good shot. He footfaulted. It's wrong. It's against
the
rules.
So now he gets a par.
No, he shouldn't even get a par. Because he got a clear advantage. Because
he slipped a little bit and kicked his disc?
No, I'm not saying he slipped and kicked his disc. I'm saying he stepped 3 inches to the left.
It's the same
lie.
Penalty. It's the same issue. He broke the same rule in both scenarios.
I'm just saying I don't agree with it. That's it. You're not going to agree with me, clearly, but that's fine.
I think that's silly.
Let the comments decide.
Yeah. I mean, I would be so infuriated if it was a stroke and distance where I made a bad shot and I threw OB and I have to come back with a penalty, I can accept that because I threw a bad shot. But if it's like...
So you're saying the rule, you only want to use the rules when you throw bad shots, but when you throw good shots, you don't want the rules to hurt your good shots. Anyways, that's going to be it for the Grip Block podcast today. Make sure to check out all our links and social media and roast Hunter for his ridiculous comments.
I don't think... Well, I'm probably going to be roasted for the payout thing, but I'm definitely not going to be roasted for the football thing. We'll talk to you next week.